Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast covers everything tech. The hottest mobile phones, tablets, games. We review it, rate it, test it. Whether you're Microsoft or Apple, Android or iPhone, we'll give it to you
again and again.
Black and white. The Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast.
Welcome to Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Charney, with
Shay Northrup.
And today we're going to be talking about Army Special Operations dropping Android for iOS, Mozilla to block Flash, is that about time, and Atomic Memory, along with riding your luggage through the airport. So we're going to jump straight into it. Well, according to what I've read, the military uses the Android operating system for certain military equipment. I guess, would that make that smart equipment? It's according to all the stories I've read, this is literally the first sentence everyone says. Well, the ordinary proving ground for smartphones may be on the mean streets of the city. Devices will be found on the battle, too. And reported from DoDBuzz is to believe Android may be soon giving away to iOS for some special operation forces. That by itself surprises me. Just basically on the nature of iOS, you can't really do what you want, nor will Apple really give anybody that type of control.
I don't know. I think it might be a reasonable choice, just seeing as how Apple is a lot more uniform and more militant-like.
At least their users are. And it's probably a little bit more secure. I'm actually surprised they're just not doing what Amazon did. You know, I'm surprised they're not like a DoD variant.
That's true. That's a good point.
Because realistically, they could make a DoD variant. They could lock it down, and nobody could do anything with it unless you have certain things. But
well, in all honesty, I can't imagine that the U.S. military knows how to use technology very well at all. You know, they're notorious for not really being able to keep up with the times. And
yeah. No, yeah, that's true. On the other hand, I think that's the one thing, like in military, you don't want to be bleeding edge. Because according to the stories I've read, they actually had issues with the devices locking up, needing rebooting. And according to this, the devices are made by Samsung, which is another weird thing.
Right.
So basically a foreign entity, foreign business is actually making mission critical items, which to me seems kind of strange.
That's actually a good point now that you bring that up, because Apple is an American company. It makes more sense that the U.S. military would be switching to Apple.
Now, the only question I'm still thinking is, can you trust the source where all this is being made? I don't think there's any Apple devices currently being manufactured in the U.S., so you still have to worry about, you know, like spy chips or something. Like, allegedly, China's been famous for doing that on certain devices. I've heard in some DoD circles, Lenovo, for example, is actually not allowed in certain areas of the Pentagon.
Oh, that's interesting.
So I can totally see still being a little worried about that. Now, the funniest part of all the stories I've read is they said if the switch took place, the ATAC would become the ITAC. That made me laugh. And all the stories have the lowercase I. So apparently the military cares about branding.
Oh, really?
It doesn't really say exactly what it is. It looks like a drone. It said a split screen of the drone's live video and map showing its route for instances better on Apple hardware, the source says. That's not surprising. I mean, the one thing Apple does better than anybody is because their operating system runs on their hardware. They spec the hardware. They spec the operating system. I mean, it makes sense that everything just runs better on something that's all designed in-house.
Right.
So why do you think they're using Android right now? Is it because they originally thought it would be better?
I think they probably started using Android just because it's easier and more available to the public.
Now, we're going to switch topics a little bit. We're going to throw in a story that just actually came across the desk, as it were. Now, China has decided to block ad blocking. And here's a little bit of the copy of the law. It's article, was it 10... 5XVI, whatever that is. Any idea?
No.
provide or utilize the software or hardware to ban, filter, covert, fast forward, or any other resistant method, legitimate advertisers. The use of network access, device application, disruption of normal advertising, data tampering, blocking of data use, or advertising by others. The use of false statistics, dissemination of false results or values to seek illegitimate interest to harm others. It sounds less like ad blocking, but it does. I mean, because it talks about, in an article I read, talks about a gentleman found head cancer and found some sort of medication for online. And the Chinese government was investigating the practices of the website they found it at. Now, the whole thing sparks a little bit of hypocrisy because China has what's called the Great Wall of China, not the physical object. It's actually a giant firewall that blocks everything.
Right.
So the idea that they're stopping ad blocking and filtering is kind of ironic to me.
You know, it honestly doesn't surprise me of all the places on the planet Earth that would be doing blocking ad blocking. I feel like China would either be the first one or the ones behind it. It is interesting to note that they're trying to stop false advertising, though, which is kind of it's almost like a blessing and a curse. Like, I love my ad block software, but if I was given the choice between ad block software or just legitimate ads without any of those ridiculous "find a Russian wife today" advertisements, maybe I wouldn't be so upset.
None of those ads, unless they're more on the side of pornography, none of those bug me. The only reason I use ad blocks is because some of them get onerous, like the pop-up ads. I seriously can't stand them. And then they have background ads that are on the websites that play audio. I was on a legitimate news store website at one point, and all of a sudden I started hearing moaning. And it's just like, do these people not watch what ads are going on their website?
That's a really good question. Well, and I feel like China would not be cool with ads like that.
I don't know enough about China. Like, historically, I know a lot, but modern China, I don't. And I'm assuming from what I know, that would be very inappropriate.
Right. I'm sure that they would not tolerate that.
The whole thing just sparks me as weird. And I do want to tell you guys, though, if you go to any website, if you have any particular website, say the gsmcpodcast.com, make sure you disable your ad blocking. One of the reasons why is how your favorite company, podcast provider, website, you name it, how they actually stay around is by those ads. So if you turn off the ad blocker, you're actually help supporting your website, that website. You may not believe it, but trust me, they love it. We love it. So be nice to us, please. And it's even weirder that some of this is kind of like, you know, in the United States, we would say buyer beware, do your research.
Yeah. Well, in a capitalistic world, you got to be careful not to buy the snake oil. So,
yeah, I don't know. It's just it's strange, but I guess with the firewall of China, and I don't want to get too much into the politics of China personally, but in an area or a country that's so heavily filtered, like I said, and then they're stopping this, it's weird. And but I guess it's not particularly unusual. I mean, governments are hypocritical, if that's a word. I mean, it's nothing new. I mean, it's what's good for me isn't what's good for you.
Well, honestly, this would only surprise me if it was a place like Britain started doing it, or like if, you know, like Germany started doing it. The fact that it's China, that doesn't surprise me.
I am curious, though, how are they going to stop ad blocking? I mean, it would be easy for them to say block Mozilla or Firefox or Chrome or Opera, that I think was just bought by a Chinese company. It would be easy for them on that end because they could just block the website.
Right.
But how do you block the software? You know, say somebody downloaded it before the block. How do you stop that? I don't think there's any way to actually do that. So
That's a good point.
There's an issue to me that it's kind of like forbidden fruit. Now that they have it, it's going to get even bigger. So it seems to me that there's an issue there, unless China has their fingers in all the software and can go, we don't want you to have that, delete.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me either.
I don't know. It's because the one thing I've also heard, it just reminds me of a story that came out years ago, and If I can find it at some point, we'll do the story. But it was about a gentleman was doing Skype with somebody in China and somehow found out that somebody was listening into their conversation.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
And originally, Skype was kind of did what BitTorrent is does. And what BitTorrent does is it's instead of downloading from one source, it uses a bunch of different sources, speeds up the download. It saves the person whose file it actually belongs to from the bandwidth. And that's how Skype kind of worked off with a bunch of different nodes. And so now that's owned by Microsoft, allegedly the servers are all in one place. So it's easier to, you know, open the doors of the kingdom, as it were.
Right.
So it's just very, I know I keep saying strange, but I'm just flabbergasted that they even would attempt that. I mean, it seems like, you know, like United States trying to ban alcohol.
Well, you know, China does what China wants.
This is true. This is very true. Now, we're coming up to a break. Now, after the break, we're going to be talking about another browser. Stay tuned.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be, visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Welcome back to the Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast. Now, right now we're going to talk about Mozilla. Mozilla is planning to block Flash in the Firefox browser. So, by starting next month and ending in 2017, Firefox is planning to stop using and supporting Adobe's Flash software. So, right now what they're going to do is they're going to stop using the not essential to users experience Flash. So like advertisements and web pages and stuff like that aren't going to be supporting Flash anymore. And then by 2017, they're planning to just stop using Flash altogether.
Now, they don't, do they support Flash without the plugin?
You know, it's one of, I think they're going to even stop the plugin, if I'm correct. Because I think you need the plugin to use Flash as it is right now.
Because I know I'm pretty much a Chrome user, and Chrome supports Flash. I use something called Flash Block, no Flash, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much what it does is it doesn't let Flash play unless you click on it. And one of the reasons people are complaining about Flash, is the fact it's a major vector for viruses right now. Because the plugin, if I remember correctly, isn't updated all that often.
Right.
Plus the fact it's just onerous. When you can use HTML5, which plays on anything, why do you use a proprietary plugin?
Right. Well, and one of the things that they were talking about is that it makes it more secure, less likely for crashes. It apparently, by getting rid of Flash, it reduces the chance of Flash or of crashes by 10%. So that's really where they're planning on going. It reduces
10%.
Really? 10%.
Crap.
And it's also supposed to, you know, give a better security, improve battery life, faster paced loading. It's supposed to just help the browser altogether.
Hey, it's about time. I mean, the sooner we can get off some of these proprietary plugins, was it Shockwave, Flash, originally all made by Macromedia, if I remember correctly. Now, when all the browsers are pretty heavy duty and we're not using IE, I think it's about time.
Right. No, we've definitely been in. And I think a lot of it, too, is just one of those things where, well, we've always done it that way. So that's the way we're always going to do it. And it's definitely time to move on.
I've done Flash before. I've made websites in Flash and I've played with a little bit. I mean, it's a pretty neat piece of kit. But nowadays, like if you actually have the Flash software, I think it saves to HTML5. So there's really no reason why you need that wrapper.
Right. Well, and what I think, one of the things about it, too, is a lot of video was played on Flash back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Like, I think the biggest was YouTube. I think YouTube, Vimeo.
YouTube, Newgrounds. Didn't Netflix use Flash at one point?
Yeah. Now it uses the defunct Microsoft software called Silverlight.
Right.
Which one of the reasons why they use Silverlight specifically, I know this is kind of a sidebar, is the fact that Silverlight lets you do DRM, it lets you limit things. Flash doesn't necessarily do that. For example, on Flash, as long as you can find the base original link, you can actually download it. Sometimes it takes a little bit of steps to do it, but it's not particularly difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Now, HTML5, however, I don't know if it still gives you that, because I think you can do DRM within the HTML5 wrapper.
Right. Well, I know if you get the right plugins, you can download stuff from HTML5.
DRM, if anybody doesn't know, is digital rights management. Basically what that is it locks you down to what you can do. So say if, for example, you're downloading an MP3 and the person who downloads it, who owns the file only wants you to be able to play that on Apple's iTouch, for example. You can actually do that. It limits what you can do. Now, there are always ways to rip the DRM off, but then you're violating the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, the DMCA. Which is another thing we should get into at some point, not the politics of it, but the policy of it, I think would be a somewhat interesting conversation if we can keep it just on the narrow side.
Well, and I think Mozilla isn't the only one who's going to be doing this. I believe Google, Microsoft, Apple, and a few other companies are planning to try to slowly give Flash the fade away.
I'm actually surprised they just don't dump it right away. I mean, I think it's polite of them and it's nice of them. Just to slowly fade it out gives websites and companies time to phase out. But I'm surprised they just don't do a hard line.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because Adobe itself has told people to stop using Flash.
What?
Yeah. From what I understand, Adobe itself is saying, maybe you guys should stop using this software. And they mentioned that last December.
Isn't that kind of stabbing yourself?
Well, Adobe has its fingers in a lot of little pies, so I don't think they really care. I think they realize Adobe is one of those companies that they'll go and they almost encourage students, film students and graphic design students to steal their software so that way they can get used to it and get to like it. And that way when they're making money in the industry, they'll only use Adobe products. Like Adobe has some really interesting marketing.
That explains why you can get Photoshop everywhere.
Yeah.
It still seems a little myopic, though. I mean, you're telling people not to use this when you're still selling it. So it just seems rather odd to me that you would do that as a company.
Well, I don't know if they're still supporting it. Are they?
They would have to. I mean, on the other hand, maybe this is why everybody's starting to phase it out. I mean, if they're not supporting the plugin or supporting at least fixing the bugs, then why use it? This could be the sole reason why Mozilla is deciding to, stop supporting it in Chrome.
Right. Well, in Adobe, when they did their new CC, the Creative Cloud, they got rid of a couple programs. Like they got rid of, Dreamweaver, which was a...
No, I think Dreamweaver's still around. Because Dreamweaver was their HTML, was their WYSIWYG website builder.
Well, they've got a new one now. I'm pretty sure Dreamweaver isn't around anymore. They also got rid of Adobe Encore, which was a DVD and Blu-ray builder. So if you're a filmmaker, it was great because you could build your own DVDs and Blu-rays with ease. It
that,
was a little buggy, but it's gone now.
That's actually something that really bugs me. We're going to switch off to the thing he brought up because I do a lot of videos and slideshows and stuff for certain ministries. And a lot of the time when they do stuff like this, all they really want is to have a DVD and have it play.
Yes.
It's nearly impossible to find a decent DVD creation suite. I actually purchased one. And if I can remember, I'll tell you next week. I purchased one just so I could give one particular friend of mine a copy of the files I made.
Well, and when you're submitting films to film festivals, you need a lot of film festivals are still only taking DVDs, which some of them are a little bit behind the times. But so you need something to burn a DVD to send it to them. Of course, I still have my copy of Adobe CS6's Encore. But yeah, it's bad. So I think one of the things that's also interesting to note is that I think it's one of those things with Flash where so many people are so used to it and so many websites still use it that it's just going to be really, really hard to kill it off.
See, I'm not quite sure if it's going to be really hard. I mean, especially if, because right now, Chrome, Microsoft, and Firefox, you could say Opera and a couple of other browsers that you and I wouldn't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think as soon as they stop supporting it, it's dead. I mean, because that's 90% of the browsers are those three right there.
Well, to me, it's kind of like the old PlayStation 2 thing, where the PlayStation 2 didn't stop making games, and they didn't stop supporting the PS2 until like 2012, which was way after PlayStation 3 came out, and that was just because everyone loved it so much and loved the old way and that sort of thing.
Yeah, but if nobody supports it, and if the website itself doesn't support the plugin, mm-hmm. there's really not much you can do.
That's true.
I mean, that's why I think it's kind of like stabbing yourself in the foot, at least any company that decides to use it, is because if Chrome specifically, I think Chrome and Firefox are number one or two, or two or one, depending on which way you look at it. If both of those stop using it, nobody's going to...
That's pretty much done.
Yeah, I mean, because how many people use Microsoft's new browser? I've tried it a handful of times. I mean, I like Chrome specifically because of... Chrome and Firefox specifically because some of the extensions or add-ons are available to it.
The only people that use Microsoft's what was formerly known as Explorer and now is something else, the only people who use that don't know any better. And as long as they support it, it's going to be it might keep Flash around just because people don't know any better.
I would – yeah. No, I don't disagree. I think some of the heavy stuff, if any banks or big industries use it – I don't know why a bank would use it. That just seems like a bad idea, but I've been wrong before. Yeah, I think businesses use IE a lot just because for some reason that's what they traditionally used. I know one company I used, I asked to install Chrome or Firefox because it was more secure, and they said, no, we will stick to IE6, which, by the way, this is way after like IE8 came out.
Wow.
Yeah, I was kind of like, you guys are pushing tin there a little bit. This is a tad bit dangerous. So we're going to switch off. We got a break coming up. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about something called atomic memory.
Want to find out what movies to go see? Then check out the GSMC Movie Podcast. It's your ticket to the latest movies, whether it's a new blockbuster event, romantic, comedy, or action flick. This show has got it all covered. They talk some what to go see now. Don't bother. What's hot on Netflix and everything in between? That's gsmcpodcast.com/movie-podcast. When it's all about the movies, it has to be this new show. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
Now, please excuse me a little bit because this has to do a little bit of more of science talk than I'm personally used to. So I actually put some notes down so I can get this right. So what they're doing is they created a 100 micron wide, which is about the same diameter as a human hair. They made sheets of atomic memory separated from one another by 5 nanometers, or a billionth of a meter. The cube could easily store the contents of the entire Library of Congress. Was it 4 or 5 human hairs that you could literally store the entire Library of Congress?
The atomic age is here, my friend.
Hey, just like Fallout 4.
Yeah, I know.
It's great. I'm amazed by this, and I think it's time. I mean, now that SSDs have finally got to the point where you can get over a terabyte, I'd love the fact you have a small form factor hard drive that will literally store everything you've ever needed.
It reminds me of the old spy movies where it's like, the microchip.
Right?
The microchip.
It's the modern version of microfilm. As the world generates more data, researchers are seeking a way to store all that information in as little space as possible. The new atomic memory devices that researchers develop can store more than 500 trilobytes Jeez. Of data per square inch. That's 6.5 square centimeters, about 500 times more data than the best commercial hard disk currently. Now, the one question I have, and I think somewhere in my notes I put down where it says that this current technology has to be a clean room, is what's the expiration date? Because hard drives, for example, over time, they can die. CDs get bit rot. Everything that has any sort of memory, was it hard drives, hard disk particularly, I think the disks can be on magnetized or something like that.
Well, from what I understand, solid state drives aren't as bad. They have a pretty long shelf life.
I mean, how long?
See, that's what I don't know. I've just been told countless times that they're better.
See, I don't know. For me, I find it a little odd, but I mean, I guess not odd, but it's strange that they say it'll last a long time, but how long is long? I mean, the technology is what, only a decade old, basically?
Right. So we really don't know.
I mean, if you talk about, like, for example, film, we have celluloid that's from silent film era. Now, celluloid specifically, you have to keep it in a certain temperature, in a certain room. But if you maintain it that way, it lasts pretty much forever.
Right.
Now, is this the same thing? If you keep it in a cool, clean room with only certain people, trained people having access, will it last forever? Because I'm totally for that. I love the idea of long-term data storage, which, by the way, this is time for me again to bring up the fact that make sure you back up your data. Because when your computer dies and you don't have access to, I don't know, your thesis or bank records, you're going to be sorry. So listen to the GSMC's technology podcast.
Well, this might be a great thing. Like, if it doesn't come out to the public, which it would be really cool if that came out to the public. But if it doesn't come out to the public, it might be cool for like large data storage and that sort of thing. Like you could even run servers off of that, maybe.
That would be cool. So it'd be like the Amazon cloud, except it would be Amazon's atomic cloud.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I'm sorry. I just can't get over that. Anytime you see atomic, it just reminds me of, you know, like the golden age of television when atomic was said with so much glee.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff that I don't completely understand, and I'm just gonna read it just because I do find it interesting. This initial part I do understand. Computers represent data as ones and zero, binary bits known as bits that they express by flicking tiny switches like resistors. The new atomic memory devices represent each bit as two possible locations on a copper surface. A chlorine atom can slide back and forth between these two positions, the researcher explained. So this is a chemical memory.
Whoa.
Then, wouldn't it be?
That's what it sounds like.
So I guess in theory, this could last forever if it's maintained correctly.
Could you imagine, like, if we were able to use this in the public, could you imagine having that much space on your computer and how small your computer would be using this technology? Like, how much further can we take this? Like,
I think we're going to have to get better with heat sinks because I'm wondering if my current processor would kill my hard drive. Because I've got a Core i7. That sucker gets hot.
Yeah, mine gets pretty hot too.
I do love the idea of sci-fi. I think it was The Mote in God's Eye, written by Parnell, talks about a pocket computer, which is, say, like your cell phone now. But imagine, like my co-host said, imagine an iPhone that can store every bit of data that you've ever created, the Library of Congress. You know, that's...
Well, and imagine not having to have giant-ass towers right next to your feet. You know, like imagine just being able to set down a small little square next to your computer,
or like the
monitor,
Apple, like the Apple Cube.
Yeah, but I mean, you're not going to get the memory and the RAM, and you're not going to be able to play. You know, you're not going to be able to play Skyrim with mods, man.
The only issue with technology getting smarter, and we got to switch off to the next story because I think the next story is pretty funny, is how do you work on it? Like, cell phones, for example, are really hard to work on it unless you got really steady hands. It's the only process, only thing I have with micro
that's a really
being
good
smaller.
Point. Well, I mean, you know, watchmakers used to have a really hard time with that as well. And that's why, like, that was a huge profession, was opening up a watch and being able to use the special glass and stuff like that to
Star Trek.
Fix watch. What about
Star Trek has these crystals. I forgot what they actually call them, but these little thin things they pull out of thing like the computer terminals.
Right.
What about it's something like that? Instead of the computer itself getting smaller, you just drop in a little, like, say, like a breath mint size cube into a little spot, and that becomes the hard drive. What if the computers aren't smaller, just the memory? And by that, they become more compact. The system becomes more modular than it already is.
There we go.
I mean, that would work for me. Now, the next story that Shay has for you, and this sounds fun.
So have you ever wanted to ride around in the airport on your luggage? John?
That's something specifically, no, I've never even thought about that.
So there's a little company, Motobag. And
Motobag?
It's called the Motobag, and it's a suitcase luggage thing that you can drive around on through the airport. It goes, let's see, it can go up to 8 miles an hour. It has a 150-watt electric motor, and the bag weighs 20 pounds on its own, and it is TSA approved.
So, but you're going to have to pay extra for that bag.
Yes. And so
one it's of the, TSA approved, really?
It's TSA approved.
The most uptight people in the universe approve the best something with a battery in it that possibly can explode. I'm impressed.
Yes. So I apparently the cost, the Moto bag will cost a considerable $1,000 if you signed up to crowdfund on Indiegogo. So that's the early bird special. When it comes out, it's probably going to become a lot more expensive. And just a reminder, if you decide to crowdfund this, you might not get your bag. One of the things that Indiegogo does is they have flexible funding, which means that if you don't make all of your money, you still get to keep the money, or at least a portion of the money, and you might not end up with what you wanted. If they don't reach their goal, you might not end up getting your perk.
Really? So it's different from Kickstarter, where if you don't reach your goal, you don't get any of the money.
Right. No, Indiegogo will let you have some of it. And sometimes people honor their perks, but there has been numerous occasions where people do not honor the perk system.
Well, I'm glad. I've actually done a couple on Kickstarter. One particular was a short film I gave money to.
Oh, yeah. I've done a bit of that myself, especially with short films. I've ran Indiegogos for short films.
Wow. When we get off the air, we'll have to talk about the short film that I helped you know, give my $5 to. I think this is cool. So you said eight horsepower?
So it can go up to 8 miles per hour.
Oh, 8 miles an hour.
And it's a 150-watt electric motor.
So I can't wait to see hacks, you know?
Right.
The Moto bag going 30 miles an hour. Is it dangerous? It sounds fun, honestly. I can see it in the terminal, people racing. I'm almost there.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny. They have a little video attached to the article that you know, shows people riding around on it, and you know, it looks kind of fun. I'm kind of worried about people crashing into people and running into people, and you know.
So the other thought was, you know, when the luggage return, mm-hmm. that's going to be a pain in the butt. You know, you only have a few seconds to grab it. You got to try to grab a 20-30 pound bag off a luggage return. It sounds like it would be a tad bit uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Well, like, hold on. I'm trying to get my motorized bag.
So one of the things that it also also to note about the Moto bag is that it can hit 80% charge in 15 minutes. So you can charge that sucker up pretty fast.
Does it talk about the amperage it needs to do that? Is it like a Samsung phone that uses the 2.1 amps versus the 1 amp?
It does not say.
Ah, darn. I would be curious.
Now, that sounds... Some of this stuff sounds a little bit too good to be true. Like, it's TSA approved. Like, sounds too good to be true. It charges up to 80% in 15 minutes. Sounds a little too good to be true. I'm wondering how, like, easy it is to steer this thing.
So after looking at it, unless the wheels are very turnable, it looks like it might be, especially depending on how heavy the person is, it looks like it wouldn't work very well at all. And the heavier the person, the less battery life you're getting out of it.
Right. And it's only 150 watts. Like, I'm kind of wondering, how long is this motor going to last before it wears out? And how easy, like, I hate to be that guy, but like, how easy would it be to convert something like this over to a bomb? Like, you know,
if it's using lithium ion, I don't think it would be too hard. Now, I think it would.
If it was lithium ion, they would not let it on the plane.
Yeah. See, so what else would it be? They're not using lead acid. It would weigh a lot more than 20 pounds.
Right. I'm not sure. It does not say.
See, I'm assuming. So it would be like, was it nickel cadmium or cadmium? The older style.
Mm-hmm. It's possible, yeah.
See, I'm assuming it would be lithium ion. The other issue, I mean, on the weight issue, is this going to be, say, like a woman for 110 pounds to a guy 150? Because I weigh 240. There's no way that battery is going to last as long as it says.
Right. Well, and it doesn't say how long the battery is going to last, you know.
Because the video, I think, is a little specious, because you take a look at it, they look like they're going really fast. Well, there was some camera tricks on that thing.
Well, and most of the people riding them are really small.
True. So I'm thinking My best guess is this will be probably anybody. I'll say 5'8 and under, and I'll say 150 and lighter.
Probably, yeah.
Because 150 watts is nothing.
I'm not going to lie. This is really interesting. I feel like this could cause some problems at airports, especially crowded ones.
Bowling for people?
Yeah, bowling for people. I'm also I'm just really skeptical about it. So I guess we'll see if it takes off. This might be the next big thing in luggage.
You just like the hover thing that right. came out? I don't know. I agree with you. I think this is way too pie in the sky, especially since they say it's TSA approved and it's an Indiegogo campaign. I don't see the TSA accepting a prototype. Because they want something that's guaranteed to work. I bet they want to see how it works. What are the batteries? They want to see the technologies behind it, would be my guess. If it's a prototype, it's definitely not in the can.
Right. And it's on Indiegogo. That's another thing that's just kind of a little bit.
Yeah, I think if it was on Kickstarter, I think the TSA would be, my opinion, would be a little bit more, okay, we'll see how this goes.
But they claim that it's TSA approved, so.
Well, we'll see. Hopefully nothing happens to it. I'd love to see it happening. I do think the one thing I think is going to happen is there's going to be airports just like that. What was that hover thing that came out?
Oh, the hoverboard?
Yeah, I think it's going to be like that where eventually airports are going to go, no, this is too dangerous. We can't trust people with it. I think it's a matter of time after it comes out. If it comes out, then it's banned.
Let's hope that it doesn't catch fire like the hoverboards did.
Yes. Matter of fact, on the hoverboards, and we're running out of time, but the hoverboards actually, they people told you to charge it in the garage because houses were catching on fire.
Oh, geez.
Ladies and gentlemen, Shay and I want to thank you for listening to GSMC's Technology Podcast. Now, we want you to do a few things before you turn off the show. We want you to go to gsmcpodcast.com, click on the Technology Podcast, and subscribe. You can find us on iTunes and everywhere on the interwebs. Now, there are an amazing amount of shows on the GSMC network. You've got MMA, you've got sports, but we want you to subscribe to the greatest show on that network, well, which is us. And we also want you to go to Facebook and type in GSMC Technology Podcast in Facebook. This is episode 17. If you have any comments, questions, you think we're right, you think we're wrong, or do you have a story you want us to do in our next episode, we want you to post it there under episode 17. And as always, thank you for listening.